So I'm sat here on a very cold evening, although it's summer, in Bembridge with Jojo Capace. Welcome to the Isle of Wight, Jojo. What on earth are you doing here?
Thank you so much, and thanks to my marvelous hostess, Lady Sally Grills, who has had more than 3 decades of friendship putting up with me. So I really appreciate that. I've been back several times in this period of time. And it's thrilling to be back this year.
Fantastic. Now, you're a real Renaissance lady.
Oh, thank you.
Because you've done a little bit of everything, both in Europe and in the States. You were born in Manhattan.
Right.
I believe your father was an attorney.
Correct.
And on your mother's side, it was a family of tailors. Is that right?
That's right.
And from there, you launched an artistic career. Mm-hmm. I think you wanted to be an actress originally,
I wanted
didn't
to
you?
Be an actress, and I had 2 incredible grandfathers. My paternal grandfather was a concert pianist, and he loved the piano so much, and I was the only one of 13 grandchildren who learned to play the piano.
Wow.
But it was terrible because my grandmother would hit my hands with a ruler if my hands were not the perfect angle on the piano.
Yeah.
And by 10, I hated my piano lessons so much. And fortunately, I didn't live too close to them. And my darling father, who had worked his way through law school, playing in a speakeasy called the Broadway Serenaders, he played a banjo, much to his parents' complete disgrace. Daddy gave me a piece of, I believe it was Tootsie Goodbye.
Wow.
Tootsie Goodbye. And he taught me to play ragtime.
Oh, fantastic.
And so I played ragtime with Daddy, and I then loved Cole Porter, Duke Ellington, and of course Gershwin. And the other grandfather introduced me to the opera and introduced me to, firstly, his illustrator, because he was a marvelous tailor with a 3-story boutique store, which even the Duke of Windsor, when he married that naughty American, he went into his shop and purchased some things in the haberdashery department. Mm-hmm. But Papa Dear, which is what his name was, he took me to the opera, as I said, the first time as a little girl, 10 years old. We went in black tie. But he also introduced me to his illustrator and then took me to meet Giacometti when Giacometti came to New York and had his first show.
Yeah.
And that was overwhelming for me because I just was totally enveloped with music and visual arts.
Yeah.
And being of Italian background, I was always a drama queen and loved being the drama queen, the middle child, always sort of scrutinized, and you're never the greatest number one or the little baby in the family. So I was the drama queen, and I wanted to go to acting school, and I was denied that opportunity.
But I think you made up for it with other things, didn't you? Because, first of all, that piano followed you around the world.
Absolutely.
Because you lived in Turkey for a while.
I lived in Turkey. I brought my piano.
I heard it.
It was great. I had a tiny spinet at that time. And the Turks were so wonderful. Nobody wore the veil. It was just a glorious time. It was the 60s. And I had a very interesting life in Turkey. I learned to speak the language. Mm. And the Turks were so kind to me, but they loved me to play things like Home on the Range. And they loved Swanee. Yeah. And they loved the songs of our great composers who were popular composers. I did dabble at classical music, but I got a big kick out of my basic jazz music. I mean, it was just terrific for me. And I think that made friends around the world.
Yeah. Now, after Turkey, you got into PR and magazines. I think you were
after with Turkey, I was married. The reason I was in Turkey was because at that time, my first husband was stationed there. It was a Vietnam War, and men had to go and serve 2 years in the military. And he lucked out. He got Istanbul 2 months after we were married. And I was this little girl, very sheltered. And when we went to say goodbye to my parents, we were something like 30 people at the airport. It looked like a wake. But we went over to Turkey. It's 24-hour propeller job that took us over Pan Am. We got over there. and we had to refuel in Paris, and we couldn't land in Istanbul. We had to land in Ankara, and this is in my soon-to-be-published at some point memoir, and we had to drive through the Buldu Mountains from Ankara to Istanbul in a snowstorm. Mm-hmm. And the first time I saw Istanbul was from the top of one of those mountains looking down at the Bosporus and the Dolmabahçe Palace and seeing it in a snowstorm. It was amazing, magnificent. Yeah. But I did have a theatrical career then in Turkey because I was able to represent America at the Mobil Oil Theater, and I had performances that I took part with a Turkish actor.
Oh, fantastic.
And that was great fun. Yeah. And that was it was a very small career.
And after that, did you come back to the United States?
We came back to America, and I had three children in Washington, D.C., and I had a marriage of almost 20 years. Mm. And during that time, to be a tax write-off for my then-husband, I started a public relations business.
Yeah.
And that's one of the reasons why I'm here in the Isle of Wight, because that's how I met Sally Grills.
Oh.
Because I had that business, and sometime later, the business wasn't a tax failure. It helped me get on my feet, which one of my big swan songs here is that a woman can do everything. Don't ever be afraid. No woman should ever be afraid. And I packed up three children, and I came to live in England after a charmed life in America because I wanted my children not to have corridor vision,
yeah,
and I wanted them to take part in the British educational system, which,
yes,
I've always revered.
Yeah.
And the first party of my first night in England, I was taken to a wonderful dinner party, and I walked in the door with my friend, the late Hetty Simpson, whose family will be remembered owning Simpsons and Dax.
Yeah.
And the first gentleman I met was this dashing gentleman named Sir Michael Grills. He wasn't Sir Michael at that. Then he became Michael Grills.
Yeah.
He was Member of Parliament. And I was so proud to meet this gentleman who made Cary Grant look ugly. Michael had such presence. And he said to me that he was doing he was in a position for Mrs. Thatcher doing Women into Business.
Yeah.
And I said, that's interesting. I actually helped President Reagan with a Women into Business program. Would you help me? He said. And I was so honored. And that is what brought my friendship to this point of meeting Sally.
Yeah.
He said, you've got to meet my wife, Sally. And Sally and I immediately took to each other. We had children the same age. And so it was sort of really a glorious time. And I was very happy to help the women with crutches.
Yeah.
And we had American Express back us up with some good financing. And really, it was really marvelous time.
Well, you've obviously been friends with Sally for a long time.
Yes.
Sally's obviously doing wonderful works here on the Isle of Wight.
I know
to get the Admiral nurses here.
Exactly.
I think you have experience of people with dementia yourself, don't you?
Well, I had this marriage, and sadly, I got out of something because no woman should be afraid if she's unhappily married.
Yeah.
It's very tough to have young children and have to support them and go through hell. And I was the only divorce in an Italian family, so you can imagine. But I had courage to do it. And when I was embraced so strongly by my English new friends, mm-hmm, and my business took off, it really was the light of heaven looking down upon me, and it was destiny. I believe very much in destiny. And so there I was, and yes, indeedy, I did go through a divorce. I had another very important relationship with a British subject many years later, and then still many years after he passed on, I re-met my husband of today, who served in the Royal Coastal Command in World War II.
Wow.
Honored by this country, and was 100 missions in a B-24 bomber.
Mm-hmm.
And Ed, who is 97 and a half.
Yeah.
He always says he's 97 and a half because you never say you're 40 and a half.
Yeah.
You say you're 9 and a half,
yeah,
going on 10. And you say you're 97 and a half going on 98. That's what happens as we get older. So Ed, who is incredible, still speaks three languages and is marvelous at bridge and dominoes, was diagnosed with dementia in 2003. But we have a very beautiful marriage. It has really shown me the maturity of love.
Yeah.
I think I asked Sally, who's very smart about so many things, who wrote those messages that we have to then repeat when we do the vows of marriage, for better, for worse, in sickness and in health, yeah, till death do us part. I think those are very profound messages. And sickness and in health, when you're young and you're 25 getting married, you never think of sickness and
yeah,
health.
Exactly.
But as you grow older, I think I was just saying to this very nice chap from the island, Peter Harrington, that after 60, you start to count up the score.
Mm.
And so health issues become part of that score.
Yeah.
Your partners and your own health issues. And it's really remarkable because a marriage goes through many things. You have the fantasy and that exciting lust in the beginning. And then you have the courtship, and then you have all the excitement with families and friends and wining and dining. And then sometimes you have sickness. And dementia is certainly a sickness.
Yeah.
And we have learned, Ed and I, to really still stay in love, enjoy life, and deal with this demon dementia.
Yeah.
And I am concentrating on developing a book along those lines.
Fantastic.
That's my project for 2017.
Uh-huh.
And I was fascinated with the work you're doing on the island in this regard.
Well, Sally's done incredible works getting three or even more Admiral nurses over to the island. Do you have anything like Admiral nurses in the States?
It's interesting because, first of all, I think it's very commendable of Sally. And I am astonished at how many people have dementia.
Yes.
We just had a very remarkable conference in San Francisco of a doctor who was detailed by some great drug companies to study it, and had been very well endowed with his studies. And I was at a lecture for the Gladstone Institute and also the consul generals of the area of San Francisco. My husband is consul general emeritus of the Ivory Coast.
Okay.
And has been for 35 years. And so he presented this to us internationally and in the region of San Francisco. Today, one out of three people over 80 will get dementia.
Yeah, it's extraordinary. Isn't
all it? Over the world.
Yeah.
And if you have had it in your family, you can guarantee you'll probably get it. So it is something that we have to face, but how are we going to face it?
Mm.
And life is what you make it. And you've got to face it, really, is the glass half full or is the glass half empty?
Yeah.
So Ed and I look at life, the glass is still half full.
Yeah.
And we get on with life, and we are trying very hard to even show our children that, yes, you can still remain in love, be in love, and let love rule your life, and not dementia.
Yeah.
I love Ed, and I loathe the disease.
Yeah. Well,
and you have to separate them.
Well, we're looking forward to your book next year. So just to remind listeners, I think JoJo and Peter Harrigan are cooking something up at the moment, and it should be out in 2017.
We're hoping for that. Peter has urged me to leave all my other plans on the back burner. It's a hard book to write.
I'm sure it is.
It's already started. But it's a hard book to write because it is a subject not only close to my heart, but I want to try to touch as many people as possible.
Sure.
To get dementia, as Ed was diagnosed quite late in life, is an easier tableau than to have it at 50.
Yeah.
And there are people that have it at 50.
Yeah.
And so this is a remarkable thing what's happened to us. I'm old enough to remember that many years ago, people could never say the word cancer because that was a no-no. And then I remember AIDS.
Yeah.
Nobody wanted to ever say AIDS in a drawing room. And now these things are said. And I think that there is a problem with dementia that people walk backwards.
Yeah.
And Peter agreed with me.
Yeah.
Not just your friends and so-called friends, because when you're happy and you're charming, everybody wants to be around you.
Yeah.
But when you start losing the plot, people do walk backwards. And sadly, a lot of family members walk backwards.
Yeah. Well, we're really looking forward to this book. But it's, on a lighter note, not going to be the first time you've written a book. Because with a name like Capace, obviously, you've got a real Italian background.
And
just Italian, but it's Neapolitan.
Neapolitan.
So it's sort of Italian times two.
Italian times two.
And you love Italy, don't you? And
I love Italy.
You've written three books about it.
I love Italy. What I should say is that for all you scholars out there, the name Capace was one of the families that Boccaccio immortalized in his famous Decameron.
Uh-huh.
And then Pasolini, the fabulous Italian director, he put it into his movie when he wrote his movie on the four different stories of Decameron, and one was the Capace about this incredible cardinal in the family, which is true.
Yes.
And Capace Minutolo is the true name, and this is a strong Italian family that forged together in 1110 or something because they needed an army. So the name is Capace Minutolo, and I'm here today on my way to Italy for a family wedding.
Oh.
It's in Florence, but it's a Neapolitan-based family, which we love, you know, I'm going to say men's song and the sea and the old solo mio.
Yeah.
Men would say wine, woman, and song. But I am very Italian in my heart, and I'm English in my mind, and I have an American passport. What do you
think
of
that? Because you live in San Francisco now.
I do.
And San Francisco, you say, is a little bit like Italy.
Absolutely.
How is that? It's foggy.
Well, firstly, we know the song, I Left My Heart in San Francisco, immortalized by Tony Bennett, who happens to be Italian.
Yeah, that's true.
And we have the pleasure of having the bay, which is a little bit like Napoli.
Yes.
And we have a wonderful mountain called Mount Tamalpais. Not that it's like Vesuvius, because Vesuvius is an incredible, you know, incredible situation of geography. It erupts.
Yeah.
But, and then we have the bay, which is not like beautiful Positano and Sorrento and Capri. It is not commercialized, but the buildings are built into the mountain top.
Yeah.
And there's, of course, the fisherman's village, and the food is divine.
Yeah.
And we have a large Italian population, but there's something about the air. And one of the things, when I had to return to America, because sad to say, the British did not give me a permanent visa to stay.
Yeah,
sorry
that's
to say.
A shame.
Yeah, but after 23 years, but that's another whole long story. But what happened is I wanted a place with the air of that wonderful stretch of the Neapolitan, and Capri and Sorrento and Positano, and no mosquitoes. They don't have mosquitoes there.
No.
And San Francisco answered that.
Well, Judith and I have been there a few times and really, really love it. It does have a very, very European feel, doesn't it? Out of all American cities.
Right, it does.
Yeah. Now, can I just pick on two Italian cities that you've written about?
Mm-hmm.
One is Rome.
Absolutely.
Because you've written a book called All Roads Lead to Rome, is that right?
Right, which is something, a saying that I think everybody in the world knows that saying. Because truly, all roads did lead to Rome when you looked at the history of that time, because of the fact that the Roman Empire was so strong.
Yeah.
And so they built these roads, and it was incredible, which I detail in the book, All Roads Lead to Rome, that even today, the way they were built was like Bath. You have wonderful Bath here.
Yeah.
I mean, they knew how to do aqueducts, and they knew how to do the draining of when it rained, how it should fall off the water. And so it's cute when you're in Italy because they always say Roma with an arrow. Wherever you are, you can always get to Rome.
Yeah. But now they say Roma Ladra, don't they? Thieving Rome.
Well,
and Judith and I were there 2 years ago, mm-hmm. and it's covered in graffiti.
Mm-hmm.
It's waist high in rubbish that hasn't been mm-hmm. taken away. There are dead cats in the road. It's €5 for a tiny little espresso.
What about dead rats in the road?
Well, we only saw dead cats. I mean, we've been there a number of times. Mm-hmm. It's in such a mess at the moment. How do you feel about that?
I was so moved by what you have just said many years ago. I wrote the book All Roads Lead to Rome in 1992.
Yeah.
And sort of packed it away while my life was taking shape. And then I retweaked it in 2010.
Mm-hmm.
And published the first book published of the trilogy of Italy in 2011. This was an extraordinary time. This was the first time in 678 years any pope ever stepped down from the throne.
Yeah.
Maybe he did because it was so corrupt and so full of rubbish, but there are other reasons. Remember, the butler knew everything. But the truth of the matter is, I saw from the year 2000, when the Pope encouraged so many people to come in because of the birthday of Jesus Christ, I saw the city going down dramatically and the lack of respect by everybody.
Yeah.
We don't want to throw any paper on the street or anything like that. They didn't care. The Italian cigarette butts everywhere. And it was just appalling.
Mm.
It was absolutely appalling. I couldn't fathom that people could live this way. And having lived in Rome, I lived in Rome a good dozen years.
Yeah.
And of course, luckily, I was injected to always come back to England, you see.
Yeah.
Because my children were here in school. Mm-hmm. And I lived in Rome, and I couldn't believe such wonderful people, such beautiful nights, and such safety because you can walk the streets of Rome mm-hmm. and you're not afraid. But such filth, such corruption. And that's why I wrote the first book.
Yeah.
And the first book's written about so many different facets of Rome, art, the love of the Italians, the idea that they move on no matter what kind of life situation they might have. And it wasn't as severe as it is today.
Yeah.
Berlusconi was in when I wrote the book, and then he was out when I finished the book.
Yeah.
I cannot blame Berlusconi because he did help Italy tremendously grow as a power. But it's also ingrained in the Italian mentality of trickery.
Yeah.
You know, Italians, they with all due respect, I have it in my blood. There's always another way to do something.
Yeah.
You can always get around it.
Yeah.
Maybe this is a Mediterranean trait, I don't know, but it is, you know, living in England and living in America, you do A to B and B to C, C to D. That's it. You can never go A to D.
Yeah.
But the Italians do.
And does that come through in your recent book? Because your recent book's called Portofino's Souvenir, which is a novel.
Yes, because it's part of the Italian temperament.
Yeah.
And when we think they're all actors, Italians are all actors. Who wears more sunglasses than anybody in the world?
Yeah.
Italians. Because they don't want you to really see, but they can look at you. And so remember the art de commedia, which, of course, is the way comedy started. You know, Dante's Commedia Divina, Divine Comedy. Life is a comedy, and the Italians have been at it so long. They don't take it seriously. The Neapolitans say, tira a campa. What happens, happens.
Yeah.
So, you know, you were robbed, your world's falling apart, your grandmother fell down, and your child is run off with, you know, the drug addict, mm-hmm. hippie, you know, tira acampa. Yeah, well, don't worry about it. You'll still nothing's going to fall apart. Not the end of the world. And somehow,
yeah.
that mentality keeps them without heart attacks. I mean, it's amazing. And they drink their wine, have their pasta, and sing their songs, and everybody want to go
somehow
there.
Somehow they get through. Well, look, we're going to have to leave it there, Jojo.
Okay.
It's been wonderful talking to you. We didn't even touch upon you being an artist and a sculptor, but you do have a website, which is jojocapece.com.
Right.
And that's JOJOCAPECE.
Correct.
.com.
Correct.
So people can go there. Your books are available on Amazon.
Exactly.
So it's Portofino Souvenir.
Portofino Souvenir.
Is the most recent one.
And the middle one is about Capri.
Yeah, and there'll be an Olive White publisher, which is Peter Harrigan.
Peter Harrigan
doing your
is
next
going
one.
To do, is very keen to do my book on, let's put it this way, La Bella Vita durante le notte scuro. The older life in the darkness of your life.
Well, that's a lovely way of putting it. Thank you very much for being with us today. And hope you have a great trip to Italy.
Thank you so much.
Enjoy the festivities there.
Grazie tante.
Thanks very much.
Buonasera.